Coming up on show 990, we take a look at the newly launched Audi e-tron GT. Stick around, I'll tell you more. Plus on the show today, we'll look at the second car they're releasing at exactly the same time, the very first RS electric version for Audi. Also the performance, the design, the tech specs, the exterior and interior highlights, and how those cars compare to the competition. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily for Thursday, 11th of February. My name is Martin Lee. I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. This is a time-saving service that I'm providing you, so I like to think anyway, I know you're busy. Today, though, a rare single-subject podcast. But it's occasionally for new car launches, if there's a new Tesla being launched or a new important car to the market. Often I'll throw away the format and we'll just do a whole podcast about a single subject. One of those special shows today because we've literally just seen the launch of the Audi e-tron GT and the Audi GTRS flavour. As I keep saying in my head, the GTRS, but it's not. We are talking about the Audi RS e-tron GT, which doesn't make sense to my brain. It's the e-tron GT and the e-tron GTRS. Shouldn't it be that? But no, they've put RS at the beginning of the name. It's the small things that confuse me. It's the first ever electric Audi RS car. So what are the specs? Well, 0 to 100Ks, that's 0 to 62. Or as the press release put it, 0 to 62.1 miles an hour. Because they're German, so they wouldn't say 0 to 62 if it was actually 0 to 62.1. I love it. That takes 4.1 seconds in the base spec car and 3.3 seconds in the RS. The GT has 476 horsepower. It's got a boost mode, so if you floor it, it'll give you a short amount of boost of 530 horsepower. And as for the RS, well, that comes basic with 600 horsepower, which is crazy. And in boost mode, if you do need to floor it, either do, I don't know, like a track run or an overtaking maneuver, it will give you 646 horsepower. The top speed, as you can imagine, limited. Top speed of the GT is 152 miles an hour or 245 kilometers an hour. And the RS will do 155 miles an hour or 250 kilometers an hour limited. For the Autobahns, of course, as it's a German car, your 155 mile an hour top limit, but so are Teslas as well, so that's not just a German thing. Let's talk about the drivetrain. The powertrain is an all-wheel drive powertrain. There is a motor on each axle, so it's all-wheel drive. Of course, this is Audi. This is Quattro. Of course, it's going to be all-wheel drive every day of the week. It is a, if you want the specifics, a permanently excited synchronous motor on each axle. On the rear, just like the Taycan, and there we go, I've said that name for the first time in this podcast, but not for the last time, it's a dual-speed rear transmission. You don't have anything to do with changing that gear, by the way. It does it all. That two-speed gearbox on the Taycan does it all automatically, and it really only uses first gear to get off the line in a hurry if you're using launch control mode, so you poodle around in the second gear pretty much all the time. So, the GT specs, so the Audi e-tron GT, is pretty comparable to a Taycan 4S. And so, if you've seen the Taycan, if you've seen a picture of the Taycan, then this car is incredibly similar in terms of dimensions, wheelbase, width, design as well. This is, I've seen people online today saying, oh, it's a rebadged Taycan. That's a little naughty and a little mean to the Audi engineers. This project Genesis started in one place, but then both cars went off in their own direction whilst remembering that Genesis of where they came from. So there are some common bits of this car. The 800 volt architecture, the battery in this is the big battery from the Porsche Taycan, the motors, and a few other things, but, you know, internally, it's very much, or the switchgear, it's very much an Audi. And actually, externally, the design is very much an Audi. How does this differ from the Taycan outside? Well, I think it looks meaner. It looks more aggressive. The lines are more creased, if that makes sense. The rear of the car above the rear wheel arches, they call them the shoulders or the muscles. They are more pronounced. This is definitely a more angular car in a similar way that the Cupra Elborn is basically the VW ID3, but with the SEAT Cupra styling, much more aggressive. And so it's got the Audi look. It definitely represents the Audi brand, but many bits of it are shared because they're the same company. And so, you know, that would make sense. In fact, even the little knobby that you use to do the steering wheel uppy downy inny outy, that's the same. But there are many other things that are different. I mean, you'd never see it. It lives underneath the steering wheel. You have to feel for it. You can't even see the thing unless you get on your hands and knees. And who cares? Who cares if the way that you move the steering wheel up and down and in and out is the same on a Porsche and an Audi? Some people are bothered by that. I'm certainly not. To compare it with other Audis, this is quicker than the RS6 than the RS7. It's got 46 horsepower more. When the press were allowed to test drive the car before release, by the way, those that did it with those little speed trap Fandango things that you put on the dashboard, the draggies, they timed it at 2.88 seconds, 0-62. And that's interesting. Again, that's a very German thing, a very Porsche thing. Underplaying the car, underplaying the specs. So when they give these, when Audi give these specs, by the way, these will always be, in terms of the range, they'll be on the low end, so they'll be on the worst wheel. So if it comes with 20, if you can spec it with 21-inch non-aero wheels, they'll give you that. So they'll put on the worst wheels, like the biggest wheels, the least aerodynamic, and they'll do the testing in a way that doesn't exaggerate the range to leave you disappointed. Like, that's the way Porsche have always done it, even with combustion cars. And so it's the same with the Taycan. They give you the absolute worst case scenario so that hopefully you are surprised and delighted. Of course, the people that like to argue on Twitter, the stats nerds, will take those numbers as gospel because they know nothing about generally, I mean, anything that they're talking about. How the ones that just bicker on Twitter are just spoiling for an argument. And they're normally from one particular car brand because, you know, they are the disciples. However, if we want to look at the e-tron GT cost, it's about £87,000. The GT will cost €99,800 in Germany. So I've done that calculation to the UK. That's not a UK price that I've got from Audi, by the way. It's about £3,000 more than the Taycan 4S. And it's £7,000 more than the Model S long range. Okay, let's talk about the RS model, because it is available from the first day on sale as well. The RS model costs from £120,000, so you are in rarefied air up there, my friends. £120,000 for a four-door, five-seater luxury tourer. That's €138,000, €5,000 more than a Taycan Turbo. Same price as a Model S Plaid. Of course, the Model S Plaid is a tri-motor setup with 1,020 horsepower. Being an Audi, there are driving modes. You can choose dynamic mode for maximum power. That stiffens the suspension. You can put it into efficiency mode. That gives you a top speed of 87, which would still get you a very serious fine in this country by going over 70. Lowers the car for better aero as well. It decouples the front motor, so you're only working one motor for more efficiency. Different from the Taycan in that the inside is very much Audi styling. For instance, just one example of that, they've taken away the third screen. That third screen in the Taycan is how you do the heating and cooling on the little screen down where your, you know, your hand would rest. Not quite where the gear stick would be on an old school car, but Audi have gone for, and you'll be shocked by this, buttons. So that if you want to turn the heating up a little bit, you just reach down and turn the heating up a little bit. It's a crazy idea that'll never catch on. Being sarcastic, of course, for those that I'm sure everybody could tell. Screens are everywhere in our cars, and yes, you can put too many things on a screen. I do think there is a halfway house for some things that need to be tactile when you're driving, especially if you're driving fast and you don't take your eyes off the road, even for a millisecond, that you just know you're reaching down, you're doing those things that you do a lot. So let's talk about the regen. It's got the intelligent coasting and recuperation like we see from the VW Group cars. So they're using AI and an algorithm to use the radar on the car to look ahead. And if you take your foot off of the accelerator and there is not anything coming up in the distance, or the car doesn't think that you need to slow down quickly, it'll allow you to coast. So if you're on a high-speed run and you let your foot off, rather than jerking you forward, and which can make passengers feel sick in some cars that have got very heavy regen, it'll coast initially, because that's actually the more efficient way of driving an EV. But if you are in traffic, or you're approaching a red light, or the car knows that you actually want to stop down, it'll give you full regen, full brake recuperation, and it'll regen at 265 kilowatts of power, which is only just slightly mega. The battery, the lithium-ion battery, is 93 kilowatt-hours gross. That's 85 kilowatt-hours net. They take away 8 kilowatt-hours as a buffer at the top and bottom end. Don't know what the split is, but that's for battery longevity and also to help with the charge curve. The voltage level is 800 volts. There's 396 pouch cells in 33 modules, if you're keeping count. AC charging is 11 kilowatts, but they're upgrading that to 22 kilowatts shortly after the market launch. Why wouldn't it just be when the car launches? That's frustrating. That's good for some countries that are scattered with 22 kilowatt AC posts. Not too many here, because I've got a 22 kilowatt AC charging Zoe. One of the best things about the Zoe, that if you can find on a 22 post giving out AC, you're not going to, if you can use that, often they're free. You're not going to wreck your battery by DC fast charging too much. DC charging, though, is the same as we talked about with the Taycan, 270 kilowatts as standard. My goodness me, that is the fastest charging. And also the charge curve on the Taycan is sweet. It'll take a really fast charge. It won't start to taper until 22, 25%. And I have no reason to think that if the battery's nice and toasty warm, the e-tron in both its guises would be no different. And that's nice, because, you know, whilst other cars talk about hitting that peak charge rate, they do taper super quick. Let's talk about the range. The RS will do 283 miles. The GT, the base version, 296 miles. We'll call it 300, right? We're amongst friends. When it's time to recharge, you can certainly charge from 5 to 80%, which is a key metric. It's all about the charge curve, because if you're DC fast charging after 80%, you really shouldn't be. So go from 5 to 80. Some car makers do 10 to 80, but you can get 5 to 80% in 22 minutes, which is, like, that's it. 22 minutes to get a battery that's almost full. If you've driven for the 200 miles, 220 miles or whatever on the motorway, look, you need to stop. And the people who are still bashing, you know, EVs and talking about diesel and, oh, I stopped for 5 minutes and did 1,000 miles, forget it. After I've done a couple of hundred miles at those speeds, I want to stop for 20 minutes. Firstly, I want a comfort break, right? And also, I want to go get a coffee and stretch my legs. And we've got a little one now as well. So, that, like, driving more than 3 hours, you know, whatever, that's not even, on our radar anymore. Anyway, let's talk about the highlights of the car. Pre-sales of the two models begin now in February. The cars get delivered, I think, in May, but certainly it's very, very soon. Drag coefficient, 0.24. That's basically how slippery and aero it is, and that's very, very good. Why? Because it's got active aero. It's got switchable air inlets on the front of the car, so those kind of holes that you see on modern cars in front of where the wheels are at the front, look closely, many of them are blanked off. They're just there for styling, but not on the Audi. It has switchable air inlets, and so at different speeds and different cooling requirements, it can open up the grille. That'll direct air to the brakes and the radiators, and then when it doesn't need to cool them, it'll close them off for better aero. The rear spoiler extends in multiple stages. It's got a completely flat underbody, and it's got a really well-designed wide rear diffuser, and the back end of the car looks like it's an EV. So none of that stupid retro, like some EVs have got these, like where the tailpipes would be, which is bonkers. Just a proper diffuser at the back, pure EV, fantastic Matrix LED headlights with an option to do laser lights headlights as well, which double the range of the high beam. At the rear, it's one of those ones where you've got the single piece rear light band coming across the entire rear of the car. There's kind of a coming home and leaving home animations, which is always cool. Leather-free interior made with recycled fishing nets and drink bottles, I think. Three-seat variations with 18-way adjustable seats. My God! How many ways can you adjust a seat? Thermal management for the battery is done on four different cooling circuits. Got a heat pump as standard, and of course preconditioning for the DC fast charging. So if you set the nav, and this isn't, you know, standard on EVs, yes, standard on Teslas, and not even... that's a kind of a recent addition as well, I think. You know, I always point out, it's one of the things that Tesla brought to the party, but it will precondition the battery. So set your DC fast charging location in the nav, and as you drive towards it, it'll end precondition, which normally means heating the battery for optimum temperature. Standard, it's got controlled damping with a rear differential lock, and it's got dynamic handling systems. You can option a rear axle. Three-chamber air suspension, adaptive air suspension with a controlled differential lock, and all-wheel steering. So at low speeds, the rear wheels move in the same direction as the front wheels. At low speeds, they move in the opposite direction for greater maneuverability. Anything above 40-something miles an hour, I think I heard in the presentation, they move in the same direction as the front wheels to enable greater stability. Very cool. Four-wheel steering, again, not particularly new in the world of cars, but very, very cool. 19 and 21-inch wheels, aero-design blades as well, 12.3 and 10.1-inch touchscreens, and... Wi-Fi hotspot inside, intelligent nav with very specific e-tron functions. So that's all about finding your way on a route the quickest way with the minimum charging stops, and it'll tell you, oh, you get to this station with this much percentage charge to 70, then go to this next one, which is all super clever. And actually made on the same production line, they said in the presentation, as the Audi R8, a non-EV. And so... they're managing that somehow in the body shop and the production line. So that's the headlines. So what do you think then? I'll whiz through a couple of other details just so that we've covered it all off. But I'd love to know your thoughts on the Audi e-tron GT and the Audi RS e-tron GT. I mean, your thoughts so far. We'll just quickly cover off the colour palette. 9 colours, including tactical green, I noticed. Very nice. Two variants of the black styling pack if you want, and that comes with all of the various silver bits like the Audi rings, the badges, all in black gloss. That seems to be the current trend in cars, to black everything out. Loads of carbon if you want. They'll put carbon fibre on the door mirrors. They'll even change the roof. I should mention, it is a one-piece full glass roof all the way to the back passengers as well, and that's heat insulating glass. But if you want, you can save 12 kilograms by having the carbon fiber roof put on. The air inlets, as I've mentioned, do a job to suck air into the car and cool what needs to be cooled, and that will also divert air around the aero wheels. And there is also the, when you think about the air inlets and how they open, they will send air into the front wheel arches to cool the brakes if you are driving aggressively. So a lot of thought's gone into performance of this car if it's being used on the track or just driven with a bit of passion. Also, the rear spoiler extends in two different positions depending on the speed, working with that completely flat underbody, which again is amazing for aero. So the airflow is cleanly coming off the rear end of that diffuser, and and then the lift that occurs at the rear axle at high speeds is fully compensated for with that big rear spoiler as well. Adaptive air suspension, like I say, it's got 42 millimetres of travel on the adaptive air suspension, increasing that effect for aero of lowering the car when you need to reduce the lift. The glass in this is all... this is all high-spec stuff, right? The glass is all noise-insulating glass. It's double glazing, so again, if you've seen the recent videos, because Tesla put it on their cars recently, so that had a big fanfare in the EV world of double glazing, and not particularly a new thing in the world of cars, but this has got it, so nice and quiet, keep you nice and warm, and they'll even do the side windows, the rear windows, if you want upon request. When you take your foot off the accelerator, the regen will regen at 0.3G, so really it's one pedal driving. The vast majority of braking, are they calling like braking applications or braking events, they call them in like press release language, will be done with one pedal driving. You'll barely hit the brakes, and the hydraulic brakes are only applied, again, if you are driving and getting on passionately, but also hitting that brake pedal very hard. Otherwise, it'll use the motors all of the time to slow the car down. Four separate coolant circuits, like I mentioned, on the high voltage system, which means that the driver can do multiple fast runs consistently over and over again. Porsche Taycan made a really big deal about that because it was at a time when Tesla couldn't with their Model S. They've since changed that with their redesigns, but Taycan went big on that repeatability of the coolant circuits. I thought I'd mention that. Very intensive cooling during DC fast charging. You can heat the battery up to 50 degrees Celsius, get it nice and toasty warm and ready to accept a ton of charge. So, that is, like, it was an hour-long presentation that I watched. It was very German. It was, you know, very big car company. It was a bit stiff, if I'm honest with you. It did the job. It was polished. You know, everyone had, you know, they'd buffed their shoes. Yeah, it looked good. Everyone was in smart suits. It was nice. Very German. It lacked any kind of warmth. I mean, Nico Rosberg came out. He was brilliant. Tom Hardy, the actor, they roped him in. No. Must be on a contract. Looks slightly dead behind the eyes doing it, but he's always good value. And Lucas Degrassi races for Audi in Formula E, did a bit of a race with Nico Rosberg. It was super polished, super slick, and nothing to complain about in the live presentation. All very staged, you know, with the host, very German. So, tell me about this feature. And the person replies, I'm so glad you asked me that. This feature is very good. Like, it was like that, but come on. I mean, what do you expect? It's not going to be, you know, woo-woo! I don't know how else to explain it. So, it was very, very slick and very professionally produced. Did the job very well. Let me know what you think. I sat and watched that for an hour, and then I went through all of the accompanying material to pick out just the highlights, because believe me, 26 pages of this later, there's a lot more we could have talked about. I think this is, in conclusion, my personal opinion, an incredible addition to the EV world. Two, really, an RS version as well. An incredible addition. I must admit, I thought it was going to come in a little bit cheaper than the Taycan. I thought that the specs were going to be dumbed down a little bit, personally. I thought the internal tensions at VW might have meant that to keep this away from being a direct competitor to Taycan, they would hobble it a bit in terms of performance, but also maybe those prices would be 10%, 15% less than where they are. But it's not. It's a very expensive car for a lot of EV. The range figures, again, like I say, have been reported today. I've seen so many articles saying about, well, the Taycan only does 200 miles on EPA in the US. Ignore all of that, because every real-world test that good EV reviewers have done, so taking into account styles of driving, cold weather, real world, all of that, the Taycan will do 300 miles real world, or get very close to it. So I think this would be very much the same, but we'll see. Those range figures I was quoting was WLTP. So a fantastic addition to be talking about EVs, you know, for years on this podcast, now almost 1,000 episodes, and to now get to a stage where we're talking about, you know, cars like this, and then they say, oh hey, by the, you know, part of the presentation was like, we're pumped about this, but we're equally as pumped about the affordable level segment car, which is coming very soon as well. Like, that's great. Premium and more affordable. I mean, Audi's not cheap, but, you know, in Audi world, more affordable. This is all just such good stuff. Such amazing news to be talking about. So, it's a pleasure to be here. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Let me know your thoughts. I'd like to know how you feel about this car, these two cars. Question of the week might tie in nicely, because I'm asking you this week, regardless of tech or specs, who do you think is designing the best looking EV and why? And I got to admit, this is a car that changed very little from the concept car, almost unheard of. Concept cars are always bonkers. And then when they make it onto the road, you know, it has to do crash tests and there's beam counters that get involved. Look, this car is almost identical to the concept car that we first saw. That is a very good thing. My personal email is hello@evnewsdaily.com. I would love to hear from you on question of the week. Who do you think is designing the best looking EVs? So there are 989 previous shows of the podcast in the archive. We're 10 away from 1,000 now. Looking forward to that. You can subscribe if you're new to the show. You are just as welcome. If you've just discovered this, we've all bunched up. There's room for you. Come along, hit subscribe in your podcast app and share the podcast with somebody who you think would get value out of it. And they can listen like you every day for free. The show is funded by our patrons on Patreon, patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. Got some new names to announce, actually, before the weekend. Premium partners are Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Avid Technology, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, and Richard Simons at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK. Have a great day. I'll catch you for Friday's show. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.